their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado, this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker. Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
And this is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. Thanks again for joining us today. What do we got on top on tap for today, Rick?
For episode 3? Yeah. I think we're going to talk a little bit about the Nikon Z system. That's what we promised.
Yeah, because it's the new thing and we're Nikon people at heart.
And it's very cool.
It is very cool. So last episode we talked about sort of the mirrorless, the state of mirrorless in general, because it's really come a long way in the last, you know, several years. But the end of last year, Nikon released a mirrorless camera, or actually two of them. They're both full frame, and they called them the Z system.
Or Z. Depending on where you are.
So for our friends in other countries, that's true. It is Z. Nevertheless, we want to talk about these specifically today. You know, what's different, what's the same, whether or not you should consider one, you know, who are these cameras for? So there's two cameras, right? There's the Z6 and the Z7.
And they are incredibly similar.
I mean, in fact, the bodies themselves are identical.
The menus.
Everything. Yeah. Well, I mean, just the external, everything is the same. The controls, the buttons, the knobs, everything is the same. So what's different then?
The sensors.
Right. So the Z6, that's our 24 megapixel sensor.
Yeah. And then I think the 7 is something like 45.7, which is a lot.
Right. So the Z7 is aligned with the D850, and the Z6 is aligned with the now fairly old D750.
Still a good camera.
Still a very good camera. So other than megapixels, what are the practical differences of those sensors? Because that's really where the differences in these cameras comes down to. The Z6 can shoot a slightly higher ISO range, which you might expect given that it has fewer pixels.
And a bit higher frame rate.
Right. It can go up to about 12 frames per second.
It's fast.
Very fast. The Z7 will shoot up to 9. You have to configure it a certain way, but it'll shoot up to 9.
That's still pretty darn quick.
Yeah. There's some subtle differences in the number of autofocus points in the sensor, because now with mirrorless cameras, you're talking about the autofocus as part of the sensor.
Yeah.
Those aren't really practical, you know, those differences.
But in use, they seem the same.
Right. But otherwise, they're, you know, so other than the sensor difference, you're really talking about two flavors of the same camera. And of course, you know, it would be unfair not to mention that there's a significant price difference as well. The Z7 is north of $3,000 US, about $3,300.
It's dropped.
It's had some specials, but that was the list price. Whereas the Z6, I think, is about, what is it, 1900 US, or maybe a little 1800, somewhere in there, around $2,000. So there's about a $1,000 price difference, give or take, depending. Now, this was Nikon's first entry into mirror. We were waiting for what seemed like forever, right? I mean, people were saying, when's Nikon going to come out with a mirrorless? And they did have the one Nikon One system, which is, we mentioned, now defunct.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist
anymore. Think in our very last episode, I expressed my irritation at them coming out with a sensor that small, but I got over it.
Yeah, we're, you know, I still have my
I never did get V2, it, but
You know. So in our last, when we last were with you, we talked about sort of the pros and cons of mirrorless systems. Let's talk about the Nikon, you know, and probably the thing that jumped out at everybody when this was announced was the Z mount.
Right.
A new lens mount. The first new lens mount since when?
1959?
So we're going back a ways.
We're ignoring the little subtle things with electrical contacts and
but the F
mechanical
mount,
differences.
The F mount, which has always been this sacrosanct thing, has been around for a really long time. And so this camera dumps the F mount. And for good reason, I think. I mean, in my opinion, the Z mount, which we'll talk about here, is the centerpiece of these cameras. Because for everything else that mirrorless do, there's nothing particularly unique otherwise. But this Z mount gives Nikon the ability to do some really great things with lenses. And if you're a photographer, you know that, you know, bodies come and go, but lenses last mm-hmm. you for a really long time. So let's talk about some of the things, you know, what's the obvious things about the Z mount? So, I mean, I know for me, when I took the thing out of the box, I was like, wow, that mount looks huge.
Yeah. It's a lot bigger.
It's about 10 millimeters, 9 or 10 millimeters in diameter larger, mm-hmm. which is pretty huge when it comes to area.
Mm-hmm.
And that has some consequences, good ones, in terms of lens design.
Yeah, especially when you couple it with the much shorter distance between the lens mount and the sensor, you can create some lens designs that have very interesting angles, and you can get pretty extreme, and you should see better sharpness toward the edges. Certainly we will see some faster lenses from Nikon. You know, they're going to come out with a 50 0.95 f-stop lens because they can.
Yeah.
And finally a 50 1.2 autofocus lens, which they just didn't have enough space in their old mount to pull off. So there will be interesting things down the road. And certainly the initial set of lenses is extremely good.
Right. So and we'll talk more about the lenses in a minute, but mm-hmm. you know, it's that whole consequence of changing the mount means they can do more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so you alluded to one thing, and that is bigger lens mount means you can have wider aperture lens designs, coupled with that short flange distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that 0.95 now is, yeah, we won't see a lot of those.
No.
But
I don't think
like
I'm going to get
said, you know, an f1.2, which is something that Canon's had for a long time,
mm-hmm.
We can finally start to see those come in for Nikon mirrorless users. The other thing that the larger mount enables is in-body image stabilization, or IBIS, as some people abbreviate it. And that's a pretty great function as well, because it means that lenses that are native don't need to have stabilization systems built into them. And what that means is that you actually get a better optical design typically when you don't have a floating lens element that's moving around. Is that that's been my understanding.
Yeah, especially with shorter, faster lenses.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder.
But the other thing, and this is a mirrorless thing, is that while some systems have had in-body stabilization, if you have in-body stabilization and it's not a mirrorless camera, the viewfinder image isn't stabilized.
Right. So, and which means it may not be accurate either.
Right. So with a mirrorless camera, you're actually getting a preview. You get viewfinder stabilization as well as, you know, the image stabilization system running. So whereas before you needed to have stabilization built into the lens to get it in the optical viewfinder, otherwise you wouldn't have it. So that's a really cool thing. And it has some implications, with respect to using, you know, not only lens designs, but also using other lenses, you know, non-native lenses. So right now Nikon, let's talk about their lenses for just a brief moment. There's only a handful of native lenses available for the system, right? So what do we got? The kit lens is a 24-70 f4.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a very nice lens.
It is.
And it's pretty compact.
Yeah. And it's got kind of a sister lens that looks and operates very much like it. That's a 14-30 wide angle zoom, you know, with, I mean, 14 millimeters is darn short. That's a very wide lens.
Mm-hmm. And it's f4 too, if I recall. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they've got a couple fixed focal length lenses, the 35-1.8 and the 50-1.8, excellent lenses. And then they've got a relatively new 24-70 2.8 zoom that's bigger than the 24-7 f4, but faster and has a few other niceties with it.
And I looked it up. That one is actually a little bit lighter than either of the F mount options.
Yeah, it's not.
I mean,
bad
it's still
at
bigger
all.
And heavier than the F4, but it's I think it's 800 grams or something like, or eight something.
I'll trust you on that.
Yeah, I looked it up at one point and compared to, say, the current Nikon 24-70 2.8 VR, it's significantly lighter.
Yeah, it's not unbalanced on the Z cameras. It feels nice.
And that's a good point, Rick, because these are smaller bodies. I mean, I think that's the other thing that jumps out at you, right? Mm-hmm. It's that it doesn't have the big pentaprism on top, and any of those things. So there's not a lot of native lenses, but they are working on those. We'll get to that in a second, because there's some really great things you can do actually with some workarounds here, and not difficult workarounds. But a few differences between the Zs and earlier cameras. Not differences, but just things that are unique to them. And one is the big one is the memory card, right?
Yeah.
So the Zs both used the relatively new, it's not that new.
No.
XQD card format. And XQD cards are kind of like, maybe like if you took 2/3 of a compact flash card, if you cut off 1/3 of it or something there. So they're pretty robust. I've been using them for a long time because they came out, debuted with the Nikon D4.
And we both had D4s.
Right.
I still have mine.
And the Nikon D850 also uses a XQD slot. Mm-hmm. But the Nikon Zs, due to their smaller size, only have one card slot.
Mm-hmm.
So some people, commented on that. And would it be nice if they had an SD card slot to pair with it or something?
It would.
Yeah. But they don't have that for right now. Another unique, or not unique feature, but if you're coming from a Nikon body like a D850, the top control layout on the Zs is more closely aligned to the D750 or even some of the DX Nikons.
Mm-hmm.
It has those user modes. So the mode dial on the top left is where you switch between manual, program, aperture, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then it has user modes 1, 2, and 3. Those are interesting because you can program those and they reset back to what you program them after you exit the mode. So in some Nikon cameras, if you change settings, well, then those settings just stick and you might not know what you changed back. With the user modes, if you change your settings and then it will reset back to whatever you first saved. And so there's a menu where you go through save my settings into mm-hmm. user bank one or something like that. And, you can decide whether that's worth it to you or not, but it's an interesting feature.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know what you're setting up, so for example, I've set U1 up to be like an action. So I know I'm going to start with certain settings, like 1/1000th of a second, certain exposure mode, certain metering mode. It's all going to be there, certain white balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I can change those. I can customize them. But when I go back to U1, they revert back to what I had originally saved. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a nice thing.
What are some other cool things about this before we get into, some of the bigger details?
Well, how about we talk a little bit about just what our initial thoughts were? I got mine earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I had been itching to get an Nikon mirrorless system for a while, having used some other ones. And
since 2011.
Earlier. Yeah. But my first response when I, got it, set up with the battery and turned it on and everything was just, this is nice. It instantly felt good. And this is coming from someone who's used Nikon cameras since 14.
Mm-hmm. So
that was a long, long time ago. It just felt comfortable. I was able to configure the camera without even looking in the user manual for most things because it was just so similar and familiar. And I'll be honest, I know you remember this because I was probably pretty annoying. I loved it from the start.
Mm-hmm.
I really did.
Oh, yeah,
it was like when I first got the D3, which I just absolutely loved in a lot of respects. It was a fantastic camera. And the Z7, which was the first one I got, gave me that same enthusiasm and excitement.
It brought me joy.
It really did. It was a joyful thing. And then I took it off on a trip immediately, which is always a dangerous thing, but I was going on one anyway. And I shot with it in Istanbul and Edinburgh, Scotland, and then London all on one trip. And it worked fabulously.
It is really a great camera. And mm-hmm. if you're familiar with the Nikon control layout, like you said, I had the same experience. I was able to basically set mine up. There was maybe a small handful of things that I had to go and say, okay, well, how am I configuring this? But those were sort of unique, esoteric features. You know, they weren't the core features. If you know Nikon's menu system, this camera is a Nikon. You know, there's
nothing. It's a piece of cake.
Yeah, and the other nice thing about it is that even though this body is small, it's ergonomically very comfortable.
Yeah,
it fits in the hand very well, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Biased opinion, of course, but it. The controls are where they mostly should be. There's a little bit of difference. And that for me, that was learning that most of the stuff now, there's no buttons on the left side of the camera, except for like the playback mm-hmm. button. Most of the buttons now live on the right-hand side of the body. But, you know, you can learn that pretty quickly. Just train your brain to find those buttons. But one of the cool things about these cameras is that you can access menus and playback while looking through the viewfinder, which I'll tell you, for playback, that's a wonderful thing.
It is.
You can, and one fun thing, I got a tip from my a friend of mine. You can configure a lot of function buttons to do different things. And when we were talking about how we configured ours, and one of my function buttons, I think we both configured ours this way, is to zoom.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, just like you used to zoom in live view or zoom during playback, you can zoom in the viewfinder. So you can use this to check your focus, but you could use this to identify an animal, you know, and you can zoom in from, you know, to the 100% level if you want. And that's really, really cool in my opinion.
It is.
Lots of other things that you can do, but I don't think there's anything, I mean, if you like and use Nikon DSLRs, there's nothing about this camera that's going to be hard for you to learn.
No. And I'll just give a few examples of things that you can pull up in the viewfinder while you're, you know, without even taking it down from your eye. You can change autofocus patterns and see it easily. You could do that kind of with DSLRs, but it's simpler. White balance. You mm-hmm. can change that easily through the viewfinder. You mentioned zooming in and out, which is great. You can bring up my menu you choose to in the viewfinder and then switch to whatever you have in my menu and get it configured. You can just do a heck of a lot with it.
Yeah, bracketing.
Bracketing, yep, I've done that.
On, multiple exposure, which is mm-hmm. one of those ones you have to dig into the menu a lot of times.
Yeah, and you get spoiled in a hurry.
You really can. That's true. I just think the experience of using it is so familiar to a Nikon user.
Yeah. And the other big thing for me when I first got it was, shortly after playing with the camera and the 24-70 that came with it, I tried my older lenses. And my gosh, is it transparent? Because I've used adapted lenses on other mirrorless systems, and there's always a compromise. Sometimes it's not horrible, but sometimes it's fairly significant. And with this system, there's just nothing.
Right.
Other than you've got that adapter.
Right. So let's talk about that for a second, because this is the key component. And Nikon introduced this camera. You know, again, it only came out with there were only two or three lenses available for it mm-hmm. upon the release. So if there's a drawback to the system right now, it's that it's the availability of native lenses. But let's talk about what they've also done, because the distance between the sensor and the lens is so short on the Zs, well, putting an adapter in between allows you to mount your regular F mount lenses. Mm-hmm. And that's the FTZ mount adapter. And right now, I think if you're shopping for one of these cameras, look for the specials, but in most cases they're including it now with the camera.
Mm-hmm.
You can, you know, some people bought them, but whatever, but they're throwing it in. So you have the F mount on one side and you have the Z mount on the other side. It's got all the electrical couplings. And so it maintains autofocus. As long as you have an AFS or G type Nikkor lens.
Yeah. Not an AFD.
Right. It doesn't, or older. It does not have the little screwdriver blade. It maintains all the metering and all the other stuff. But I think your point was that it also couples great with your old Nikon manual focus mm-hmm. lenses, which you may or may not have a closet full of them like everyone. I know you do, but not everybody does. But so the good news is that you're not hard pressed if you buy this system to go out and buy native lenses right away.
Right.
I mean, you're going to want them.
Yeah.
I think that's the point. But you can use them. And then there's some wonderful technology that opens up when you start using your F-mount lenses on the Z camera. And the two that we kind of alluded to before that are just huge are the in-body image stabilization system, the IBIS, and then the other one is focus peaking for manual focus lenses, or just using lenses mm-hmm. manually. So let's say you have an AFD type lens, or let's say you have an older lens like the 85-1.4 AFD.
Okay.
That's a great portrait lens. Mm-hmm. A lot of people had it around. It won't autofocus on the Z because it has the screwdriver blade, mm-hmm. but you get focus peaking. So you can use that to help you manually focus, and it works really well.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden your non-stabilized lens gets the benefit of stabilization. So this was pretty huge. So all those primes that you might have lying around, whether they're manual focus or otherwise, that didn't have VR systems, suddenly become 21st century stabilized
yeah.
lenses.
And it's remarkably easy using those older lenses. It really is.
Mm-hmm. If you do use a manual focus lens, you'll need to put in some settings in there to tell it what the aperture is and stuff like that.
And the focal length, so it knows how to set the stabilization system.
Right. But then you can use it with the, you know, the live view histogram in your viewfinder.
Everything.
And all those wonderful features. It's great. But lenses are really, you know, where this system is going. And I think for, you know, a lot of us, I mean, no one wants to have to go and upgrade their glass. But the new lens designs that you were alluding to, you know, I looked at the 14-30 and I tested it against my 14-24, which is, we both know is mm-hmm. an outstanding lens
mm-hmm.
and it held its own.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it was as, you know, very good, just it's F4, but you know, whatever. And it's very compact. It's much smaller and lighter than the equivalent 14-24.
And it will take filters.
And it takes, yes, big filters, but it takes them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are some great things. Another really cool feature is you know, focus stacking,
mm-hmm.
automatic focus stacking. We call it stacking, but it's bracketing, really.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea, the concept of focus bracketing is that you take a bunch of images, each with a slightly shifted point of focus, and then you stack them all together in an editor, mm-hmm. Photoshop or Helicon Focus or some that come to mind. And then you end up, through creative masking,
mm-hmm.
you end up with an image that has much greater depth of field than you could have got. And we'll talk about that. It's a topic some other time. But what came out with the D850 was the ability to automatically set this up. And so that you could push a button and it would take a certain number of shots and it would space the focus distance in between them. You know, you could configure mm-hmm. it. It's not hard to do, but it's not intuitive either. I mean, it's one of those things. And the Zs take that a little bit step further where they'll give you kind of like a focus mask preview at the end when it builds it. So you can kind of see if it got everything.
And you can choose to use the electronic shutter with it. So the process is just silent.
Right.
It's amazing. It's like, did it do something?
Right.
Yeah.
So silent photography is something that that's not unique to mirrorless. I mean, it's not unique to Nikon. It's unique to mirrorless. But yeah, with an electronic shutter, you literally almost don't even know you're taking photos. You have to look at the playback. That was my experience.
Yeah. And like, then you find out, oh, it shot 10 frames.
Right.
Well, that's nice.
So for people who would be shooting like, you know, a wedding in a church or something, or golf, I mean, oh my gosh, all of a sudden you have this it's not that we didn't have those available to us before, but we have them now in a system with a sensor that delivers the kind of quality you would get from, you know, really great cameras. I mean, I remember a long time ago when we interviewed Dave Black and he was talking about using a Coolpix. Well, that's great because it was silent, but it was still, you know, a tiny compact camera sensor. So now you have a full frame 45 megapixel sensor. It's pretty awesome. You know, another thing you mentioned, but they're working on other adapters, right? Or some people are working on other adapters for other lens brands.
Yeah. There are a bunch of ones that are, quote, dumb adapters that are out now that don't have any electronics in them and will enable you to put almost anything you want on a Z-body. Lenses, Canon lenses, Pentax lenses, you name it. But there are some smart ones coming out now. There's one that just came out that allow you to connect Sony mirrorless lenses to Nikon bodies. It's incredibly thin because the difference between the mounts is not significant. The Nikon has a little bit shorter flange distance, but it will allow you to have all the exposure info, autofocus, etc. It's not perfect, but it's out there. And then there's a Canon to Nikon Z mount that's being worked on by someone else. We talk about those things in future episodes. But they're showing up, which is cool. And it helps with people who are transitioning between some of those systems to the Nikon system.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And, you know, one of the things we like to always do with these reviews, I think it's good to have a well-grounded perspective of what this is about. I mean, you and I are both longtime Nikon shooters. And while we've shot other things, you know, we still gravitate towards Nikon. But, you know, let's ask the question, you know, here in 2019, who is this, what kind of photographer should be looking at the Nikon Z system? You know, that's the real question, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the first answer right now is someone who has been using Nikon equipment. Makes it incredibly obvious. And the reason I say that is right now, like we mentioned earlier, there are not a huge number of native lenses. So if you've already got a bunch of Nikon DSLR lenses with that FTZ adapter, you can be in really great shape right from the get-go. If you're starting with no Nikon equipment, I think you'd want to at least think about it, you know, whether or not it's the best choice for you. If we're okay with the initial set of lenses that made you happy, then it's a great decision. If you need more native lenses right from the get-go, maybe you look at the Sony. I mean, both systems are very good. I like the Nikon a little bit better, but they're both
true. And I guess as a addendum to your point, not just someone who has Nikon lenses, but Nikon FX lenses.
Yeah, true.
Because these are both, you know, 35 millimeter, what Nikon calls FX, what some people call full frame sensors. So if you have a lot of crop Nikon lens, DX lenses, you can still use them.
Yeah.
But you're going to have the same constraints that you would have if you were putting them on, you know, a D800 or, you know, a D750. Yeah. So you would lose that. You'd have to lose some megapixels. And it'll do that.
Yeah.
You know, but so it's compatible, but it's not optimal, I guess.
No, the nice thing with the Z bodies is, unlike using a DX lens on an FX DSLR in the past, where you saw a little image in the viewfinder.
Or a crop.
Now you'll see something that's the same size, you know, so it fills up the whole viewfinder.
Right. The viewfinder gets magnified. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
But you do lose the resolution.
True. So that's, you know, that's a thing. But, you know, more lenses are on the way. I know that there's some places out there, Nikon on their website and others have the roadmap. So I know that there's a 70 to 200 in the works.
Yeah, 2.8, followed by an F4.
Okay. And then there's a 14 to 24 2.8 in the works.
And yeah.
The 50s.
And a 20, a 24, an 85, bunch of other things.
So, so what is your, when you go out shooting with your Z, let's say you're traveling. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess it's always depends on what you're shooting, but mm-hmm. your typical, what, Rick, what's your typical kit look like when you've got a Z body?
The 14 to 30, one of the two 24-70s, and then I'll have one of my older 70 to 200s, the 2.8 or the F4. You know, that's kind of the basic.
The three lens kit.
Yeah. You know, it's not a different answer than what I would have given in, you know, shooting with DSLRs. And then,
no, we just wanted to hear you say it.
Oh, I know. And then, of course, we both know the next part is, you know, it may be different. Like, both of us were up on Mount Evans photographing mountain goats like a week ago. We're using 500 millimeter lenses and with Z bodies, and they worked great.
Right. And, you know, I'm in the same, you know, I'm looking at a trip coming up. So I've got a photos tour of Scotland coming up in mm-hmm. September, as well as my trip to the Badlands in August and those things. Mm-hmm. But that trifecta kit of, you know, going back to its standard three, the 14 to 30, 24 to 70. Now I just have the F4 one, but for landscapes and travel, that's probably your choice. You know,
they're both really good lenses.
Yeah. And then the 70 to 200 F4 F mount lens mm-hmm. with the FTZ adapter. That's a great kit. Some other really interesting things that I've noticed just playing around with these, cause I know we don't have a lot of time. We're talking about the autofocus. You know, these cameras autofocus with the sensor. It's not always the fastest, although it's pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. I mean, in most situations, but it tends to be dead on accurate. You don't need to use focus calibration, AF fine tuning,
right?
Even though that feature is in these cameras. But here's something that I discovered that just absolutely like blew away my, you know, caused my chin to drop. My jaw to drop, I should say. And that is, with certain lens accessories, extension tubes, and teleconverters, this camera just does great things. And I'll give you two examples. One was my 70 to 200 F4, and I have an old set of Kenko autofocus extension tubes. So this is for close focusing. When I used it on any of my DSLRs, it just chattered a little bit. I could never quite lock the focus on. It was never mm-hmm. right. You know, and sometimes an extension tube is a lot easier to pack than a macro lens.
Mm-hmm.
With the Z, it just focuses. There it is. It's just, and it's dead on. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I saw was autofocus performance with teleconverters. Now, teleconverters are a whole topic, but, you know, most of you probably know when you put a teleconverter on your lens, you lose light. So, you know, if you put a 1.4 teleconverter, your lens becomes one stop slower. An F4 becomes an F5, or a 5.6, and a 5.6 becomes an 8. And with a 2x converter, you lose two stops. Now, with the DSLRs, Nikon DSLRs, the good ones, they will allow you to autofocus with a combo that maxes out at F8. And you can kind of get away with a little bit more sometimes in good light, but that's about it. And even if you have that, you can only use the centermost autofocus point. So I thought I would get cute. I put a 2x teleconverter on the Nikon 500 f5.6 lens. And that's f11. It does go to 11. Yes, I should point that out. It just occurred to me. But two things I discovered. One, it autofocuses.
Ooh.
And it autofocuses with any point that I choose in the viewfinder. I'm mm-hmm. not constrained to a center point. And while I wouldn't call it fast, and I wouldn't try to track anything necessarily with it, it autofocused accurately. If I put that combination on my D850, I don't focus at all. It just hunts.
Right.
In any kind of light. It doesn't matter. So all of a sudden, there are certain combinations of lenses and teleconverters that you might not have thought about before, and you can suddenly use them. Mm-hmm. And again, you're going to have the same limitations with light, and you know, you're still shooting at F11. I mean, don't get me wrong, but it becomes, you know, I can walk around with a 1,000 millimeter equivalent, right? I mean,
and the viewfinder isn't dark.
The viewfinder isn't dark. Yeah,
when you use that,
that's
combo.
Right. That's a good point. It adjusts. So that was pretty incredible. But the other thing I noticed with the teleconverter specifically was that even with AF fine tuning, when I started getting into some of the teleconverters, the quality never seemed great. And I think some of that had to do with the focus being not quite on.
Right.
There's a little bit of slop in phase detect autofocus systems that you find in DSLRs. I don't see that slop with the Zs. Right. And so shooting with a 2X converter or the 1.7 converter suddenly becomes an option that I didn't really want to choose before.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take a 300 millimeter F4 lens, put a 1.7 converter on it, you've got an F6.7 500 millimeter.
Yeah.
So really cool.
Yeah. I think, you know, the takeaway for those of you who've been listening to us just rattle on here for, we like the system a lot. We're not exaggerating saying that like it a lot. I think if you were doing sports photography, I would still recommend a DSLR, but especially with the recent firmware update, which improved autofocus and added in the eye autofocus feature.
Oh, that's a cool
thing. It's working very
yeah.
well. But sports photography, I'd probably wait a little bit longer if you're doing it professionally.
And I think that's fair. I think that's mm-hmm. the last area where mirrorless has yet to really crack in, mm-hmm. although it's certainly getting closer.
You can do it. You can do it. Yeah. It's just a little bit more challenging.
It is. So that's our take on the Nikon Z system for now. Of
yeah.
course, if you have questions for us or feedback or want to just tell us, you know, how awful or wonderful we are, please don't forget to leave us comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/imagedoctors. And you can always find our episodes at my website, luminescentphoto.com. Mm-hmm. And you can always look at Rick's photos at
geovistaphoto.com. So geovistaphoto.com.
There you go. And until next time, we're going to sign off and have happy shooting.
Thanks.